Ladies and gentlemen, welcome. Thank you so much for tuning in today. This is Red Ice Radio. My name is Henrik Palmgren from Sweden, and it's always a pleasure to have you with us. I hope you had a good weekend, by the way. We are speaking with Matt Forney, who returns to the show today to talk about RK selection theory, the evolutionary psychology behind politics. And then later in the second hour, we're going to talk more about the Donald Trump campaign. Matt is an author, journalist, and entrepreneur currently based in Chicago. A native of Syracuse, New York, he has lived in Canada as well as the Philippines and studied English and journalism at SUNY Plattsburgh and the University of Albany. His writing primarily focuses on masculinity, the relations between men and women, literature, and American culture. Matt is a columnist for Return of Kings and Write On and blogs regularly at his website mattforney.com. He also has written for Tacky Magazine, Alternative Right, and he serves as the editor of Reaction. Additionally, he's the author of the self-help guide, Confessions of an Online Hustler, and several other books. Now, regarding the second hour, as we get more into the Donald Trump campaign, we recorded this interview before the weekend, and there, of course, have been new developments each day since that time. There were more disruptions in Arizona, where Joe Arpaio showed up. And Trump also now this Monday, when the show is released, is speaking at AIPAC. We'll probably have to address the latter directly in another program, as those hadn't transpired by the time this was recorded. But anyway, we're going to begin with RK selection theory. If you haven't heard about this before, definitely stay tuned. Interesting stuff ahead. Matt, welcome back. Good to speak with you again. Thank you for coming back.
Yeah, thanks for having me back on, Henrik.
You bet. So we met briefly at MPI last year, not the most recent one here. It was good to see you there, although we didn't get too much time to speak that much together, but it was great seeing you there. So today we have you on the show to discuss primarily the evolutionary psychology behind politics, RK selection theory, and really the evolution of liberalism versus conservatism, how things politically are playing out from a kind of a biological perspective, if you will. And later in the show, I hope to get into the U.S. presidential campaign as well. A lot of things to discuss there. You were actually at the Trump rally in Chicago, so there's a lot of good stuff we have to discuss there. But first off, I guess just full disclosure for our audience as well, we reached out to anonymous conservative to speak about his book, The Evolutionary Psychology Behind Politics, as I mentioned, about the RK selection theory. We haven't spoken about this before on the show, and it's a really fascinating topic. And of course, we will refer to you, Matt, to kind of handle the talking. So first, I suspected that maybe you were an anonymous conservative, but that's not the case.
Yeah, I don't know who he is, but he regards me as probably the foremost expert on it, aside from him. So that's why he probably tapped me for this.
All right, very good, very good. So let's just kind of back up all the way here, and let's go over this kind of from the beginning, because we, as I said, we haven't talked about it before. There's really a lot of fascinating things pertaining to some of the biology of it as well. But where would you begin for people who have never heard about RK selection theory before?
Well, I'd give a quick brief overview of this is a concept from evolutionary biology that is usually in many places applied to animals, but not really to humans. It states that there are two separate evolutionary strategies for propagating your genes, you know, survival. There's our selected sexual strategies, and there's the K-selected strategies. Now, a K-selected strategy is high investment parenting, two parent families, late sexual maturation, geared around a world where there's limited resources. Anonymous conservative usually compares RK selection theory by comparing wolves and rabbits. Now, wolves are K-selected because wolves are predators. They live in a world of very limited resources because they're animals, and there aren't that many predator animals typically don't have a lot of there's not a lot of resources to go around. So wolves have very tight-knit packs. They're very loyal to their in-group. They don't have a lot of children, but they spend a lot of time investing in raising those children. The little two parents, mothers and fathers are very involved in the upbringing of wolf pups. Whereas our selected sexual strategy is for a world of unlimited resources, or high resources. You have very low amounts of sexual dimorphism, in fact, androgyny, because men and women typically sort of assume the same roles. You have very low loyalty to the in-group, and you have sexual promiscuity, just breeding like mad, and that would describe rabbits. Rabbits eat grass, so And there's so much grass on this planet, you know, no amount of rabbits are ever going to be able to eat all that grass. So they have a, rabbits have a psychology where they have no loyalty to each other. If a rabbit sees another rabbit being eaten by a predator, he's not going to try to defend his buddy. He's just going to hop away. They obviously breed like rabbits. That's where we get the expression from. And the anonymous conservative's innovation is that he realized that in many ways it applies to humans. Broadly speaking, conservatives tend to be K-selected, which you can see, and liberals tend to be R-selected, leftists tend to be R-selected, which you can see in the way different ways each group acts. You have conservatives are about family values, the nuclear family, sexual dimorphism, late sexual maturation, and about competition, about trying to strive to succeed in a hostile world, whereas liberals, leftists, are about getting free resources via the government, low sexual dimorphism, you know, sexual promiscuity, having kids all over the place, you know, and no loyalty to the in-group. You know, they tend to be, if not outwardly subversive towards their countries, they tend to just sort of stand by and not do anything when the country's being taken apart.
Exactly. Now, so some of the, you know, scientific kind of studies or the reports have been done on this, of course. They put mankind in the case selection immediately and kind of said, yeah, that's more or less what's going on here. Don't worry about it. It wasn't really broken down and discussed in that way, because just as you say, the art selected is usually exploiting a niche, right? Fecundity, making a lot of babies. You mentioned rabbits, there's frogs, there's many other. They have, you know, they release, you know, in some cases millions of eggs they go for that rate, which is basically, you know, let's produce like, you know, many hundreds or even thousands. And hopefully at the end of it, after the predators have had their say and whatnot, there will be a few left over. Right. And so the K is kind of the opposite to that, as you said, which is usually dependent also on resources or carrying capacity, basically, that the environment is limited. Right. So you have, in the case of humans, you have high investment parenting. But initially, if you look at just the science of it, tend to be like a contradiction there, because, you know, liberals, right, or left-leaning people, they don't have large families, right? So usually, right? So it doesn't apply in the same way as it would if you look at nature, for example, right? So this is more about the mentality, the strategy for how we approach how to survive, correct?
Yes. We have a number of artificial innovations in our society that allow people to sort of, you know, defer shout like birth control, for example, and abortion. But let this have the ability to sort of tamp down the number of kids they have, but they're still acting like they're trying to have a huge litter of kids with a sexual promiscuity. It's just that the technology enables them to avoid the consequences of their behavior, whereas, you know, in nature, animals can't do that. You can actually sort of see this dynamic playing out on a broader scale. If you compare, say, civilizations that evolved closer in colder environments, you know, like, you know, it's Henrik, you live in Sweden, you're Swedish, so you have that. Northern cultures tend to be more case-selected because, you know, the winter. I've never been to Sweden, but I imagine the winter there is pretty harsh.
Sure.
So you're going to have to band together in small groups and be prudent with your resources and stick together and help each other out, because otherwise you may not survive the winter. Whereas you get closer to the equator, and it's civilizations around the equator tend to be more R-selected because, you know, the weather's pretty pleasant in, say, parts of sub-Saharan Africa or in South Asia or in South America. You're not going to die in the winter because it's not going to get cold. So, civilizations there tend to be sort of, and also there are ways, it's a lot easier to just breed irresponsibly. So that's why, it's sort of like that George Carlin joke about do you think there's more rape at the North Pole or at the equator? And he says, the North Pole, because there are tons of people at the equator because all they're doing is having sex. Whereas, how many are supposed to be got, like 30? So, basically, how this applies to politics is that Thomas Conservative posits that when civilizations start out, they tend to be case-selected because, like, for example, say, the foundation of Rome or et cetera, people tend to be, there's not a lot of resources to go around. You're coming from the wild, you know, what Thomas Hobbes described as the war of all against all, and so society is going to be more case-selected. But what happens is as these societies become wealthier and more divorced from nature and more divorced from the struggle to stay alive, they tend to become more art-selected. And what happens is that eventually a society reaches a tipping point where there are no more resources to consume, things collapse, case selection comes back in a big way, and the cycle sort of starts all over again. And he's positing that we're at one of those major shifts from art selection to case selection right now, because our civilization, Western civilization, is on the brink. The economy is continuing to collapse. We have all these refugees coming in from Europe and immigrants coming in from other parts of the globe, straining further resources. People are poor. The elites are picking us off left and right. And what we're seeing is a shift to case selection because resources are becoming very scarce.
Right. Yep, exactly. Now, I don't want to run ahead of myself and make things too complicated, but I did want to bring in this point. As you mentioned it, it came to me because you said that people on, for example, in colder climates, so let's take Scandinavia, let's take the north, that they initially started out as K, but has obviously something has changed, right? That in since the 60s, 50s, I'd say, they've definitely become more liberalized in the American sense, left-wing, collectivized. Is it technology that has changed that, right, so that it's turned us from one to another? This is predominantly now, so not everyone, of course, is going to be R in Scandinavia, but as the structure of government and the way that feminism has taken hold, for example, is very indicative of the fact that it's R-leaning today. So do we explain that by the fact that we have technological advancements and we've become very comfortable in the way we can live up in Scandinavia today compared to many hundreds of years ago?
Yes, technology is a big factor. Technology, labor-saving technology, such as, computers and whatnot, make it easier for all of us to just, sit on our desks all day and have very, very leisurely lives compared to, the peasants that we sprung from. And also, the increasing size of government, the increasing size of social welfare programs, et cetera, making it much easier for people who are not, to be less competitive. Again, I'm not familiar specifically with Scandinavian culture, but, I see basically you have the same situation in the U.S. You have, you got your welfare, your Social Security, your Medicare. Everybody's trying to implement universal health care. By having the government provide these resources for you, these perks, you don't need to compete as hard to get a good job or succeed. So accelerates an R shift, and then makes people lazier and more dependent and more promiscuous and it feeds on itself to create a greater R environment, at least until there's a tipping point in terms of resource extraction when there are no more resources to be had.
Yeah, right, and that's what we're beginning to see now. So let's just go over this for a little bit here. We have that, as you mentioned it, left-right, divide, and that their reasoning here in the RK selection theory and what Anonymous Conservative has pulled out is that this actually then has a reflection in human behavior, and ultimately this reflects itself in politics and some of the things we're struggling with now. We have this issue of course, a left brain and a right brain, and those might not correspond to the things that people think they initially correspond to. Like, apparently the left brain is more mathematical, more about structure and order and numbers to a certain degree, while the right side is more, creative and musical and whatnot. But my point to bring that up is that we are very much dependent on very, strong kind of polarized forces, if you will, that it's very difficult for us to to set ourselves outside of these. We're very much dependent on a strong, left side and a strong right side. And this, I think, Matt, reflects itself into politics as well. And that's why we have these continuous battles between these two sides, right?
Yes. And you brought up brain structure, and that's another integral part of Anonymous Conservative theory. Scientific studies have shown that leftists and conservatives have actually very divergent brain structures. There are a huge number of differences, but the central one is that the amygdala, which is the portion of the brain that's responsible for regulating fear response, on the average, conservatives have a much, much larger amygdala than leftists do. And studies have shown, for example, that small amygdalas, atrophied amygdalas, are linked to various sorts of mental disorders, not just in humans, but in other animals as well. There was a study done a few years ago with rats that had their amygdalas burned out, removed surgically. What happens when you remove the amygdala in a rat is that it starts running around like crazy, fornicating with everything that moves. If it has kids, it ignores those kids and lets them get eaten by predators, and it just acts completely insane. And you see this, and you see the way leftists act, the sexual promiscuity, the rampant acceptance of foreigners, and they're claiming that conservatives are afraid. We're afraid of everything. It's like, no, we're not afraid. It's just our brains aren't functioning properly, and we see all these social trends that you're encouraging, and we see how unhealthy they are. It's also worth knowing that having a shrunken amygdala is connected to narcissism and psychopathy and other intractable personality disorders. And Adam Serwer has made this point in his work as well. A great portion of what we see among the left, their behavior is in many ways just intellectualized narcissism. We're dealing with people who are particularly younger, like millennials, who have grown up in an increasingly sheltered environment. We're dealing with people who have brain damage and are basically trying to enforce a narcissistic construct on the rest of us.
Interesting. Now, so the amygdala, is that something, then, according to the research, if he includes that in the book, that we are dependent on from birth, that this seems to be genetic, or does this change over time depending on your behavior or environment or something like that?
It's a combination of genetic and behavioral. It's possible to actually sort of encourage people to become more conservative or help develop their amygdalas later in life. We live in an environment where people are insulated from the challenge. That plays into our case selection theory, because people with larger amygdalas have been exposed to more aversive stimuli during their formative years, you know, whereas in a case like I'm talking about these kids these days, millennials, who have been raised by helicopter parents. They haven't had to deal with any strife. They haven't had to, they've been taken care of by their parents their entire lives and coddled by the schools. They are insulated from opposing viewpoints, so their amygdalas are very shrunken. And on the extreme level, this is where you get the whole, like, tumble, like, OMG, I literally can't even, you know, triggered by right-wing viewpoints calling, we were talking about the Donald Trump campaign. That's when all the people getting triggered by him just saying that, oh, America needs a border wall, America needs to protect the national interest, and they start screaming racist. That's in many ways a reflection of this amygdala damage. You've got a group of people who have been so insulated from the world around them that when they leave that protective environment, they discover that, oh my God, not everyone agrees with them on politics. They go completely insane. They can't handle it. And on the extreme level, they keep trying to shut down opposing viewpoints through riots and hate speech laws, etc.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we'll definitely talk more about Trump later. But so it's basically the relationship now then between these groups is very interesting in our society, the way this has manifested itself. There's a number of things we can discuss here. But from one end, it's a parasitical relationship, right? Because the R needs the K, right? I mean, we have a structure of government which, that touts free stuff, right? Get all of it for free, but ultimately someone is paying for this, someone is contributing so that all of these ideas that they have on the left can actually be fulfilled. So in most cases, it's due to the success. Here's where, in my view, anyway, it gets kind of weird, but it's partially due to the success of the K-selected that gave rise to the R-selected, right? That out of that environment success, if we look back to our ancestors in the way that they managed to survive or whatnot, that's what gave us the ability to sit around on our asses today and be lazy, right? So one has given birth to the other. Would you say that's correct?
Yes, basically. The reason why we have such a large number of R-selected narcissists running around is because our K-selected ancestors did such a good job of building functioning societies, functioning countries, that we have a resource we have a resource glut. And whenever you have a resource glut, that's when you start getting R selection, because people don't have to work as hard, you know, they can sponge off the government or whoever, and as a result society moves towards R selection as it gets wealthier. So the two of them sort of operate in a sort of uh, I, I guess I don't know if yin-yang is the appropriate term, but we tend to bounce from one to the other based on the actions of one to the other. And that's where the case selection comes from. The R-selected types eventually consume all the resources, and we end up moving towards case selection because that's the only way to survive.
So is it a historical pendulum that swings back and forth like that? Is it that clear?
More or less. You can track this pattern in pretty much the rise and decline of any great civilization, whether it was, say, the Roman Empire or Victorian Britain or what's going on in the U.S. right now. The K-selected individuals build the society. Eventually it gets to the point where R-selected individuals take over and just consume all the resources, and everything starts all over again.
Jeez. Wow. Yeah, that's amazing to think about it that way, you know, because, you know, let's be honest about this, too. The successful nations and whatnot is obviously dominant in the West. It's the countries built and structured mostly by Europeans. And now, of course, we're having I'm not saying that there wasn't importation of slaves, etc., into ancient societies. And there's some that even theorize that Egypt and Rome, especially Rome with the serviles uprising, that led to its demise to a certain extent. It certainly aided it along. But I think today, it's even more unique situation because there's millions of people now that are pouring into America and Europe, and we're moving very, very quickly in that direction of some kind of collapse, be that economic or be that on a civic level, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, and it's worth noting that these refugees and these immigrants tend to be very R-selective themselves. We've seen dozens of reports coming out of Europe. Basically, these Syrian refugees who are fleeing war and are desperate for survival they're throwing tantrums because their internet isn't fast enough, the food isn't tasty enough, they're bored and they have nothing to do. Most refugees, like if I was a refugee and I had to flee my country and go somewhere else, I'd be grateful that another country would be willing to take me in. But and you got instances like, for example, Iraqis who are like refugees in quotes. We're going to say, like, Finland, and they're turning back and going home because they're like, Finland's too boring. There are no bars here. There's nothing to do at night. Like, there are selected individuals who are looking for a dopamine fix. They're looking for free resources, and they're getting angry when the free resources aren't being doled out quickly enough. So these people are, showing for their own actions that they're drains on society, and their presence has forced the native Europeans going towards case selection, going towards the right. I mean, a few days ago we saw that in Germany, the AfD, I think it's Alternative for Germany, the anti-immigrant right-wing party, saw huge success in the regional elections just because people are seeing all these ungrateful refugees coming in, consuming resources, raping women, and just generally sowing anarchy. And they're like, we've had enough. We don't have any resources. We have to protect what we got.
You know, initially you would think then that, oh, well, these people are the case selected. These people are the predators. They're doing the raping and whatnot. But that's not the case. That's not the case then.
No. And interesting you brought up rape, Henrik. I made this point in an article myself about a few weeks ago that a lot of people got upset about. And rape is in many ways an R-selected form of sexual strategy because a rapist forced himself on a woman who doesn't want to have sex with him, whom he hasn't earned the right to have sex with. So what we see with all these raping, that's more evidence that the refugees coming in are selected because they just want to, they feel entitled to have sex with these white European women, and they justify saying, oh, they dress like whores, and they act like sluts, and therefore they have it coming. And I think at a certain level, the leftists who are encouraging refugees to come into Europe at a certain unconscious level actually want these rapes to go on because in many ways it's a form of R-selective sexual strategy. You know, these rapists will just come along at a certain unconscious level. They impregnate these women, and it's an R-selective way of getting your genes to propagate very, very easily. So it's the only way to really explain why, despite the fact that feminists plan to be opposed to rape culture, they're welcoming in a literal rape culture from the Middle East.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we put up a story yesterday. It was about how London University in London, I think it was London School of Economics, actually hosted this kind of Islamic society, a dinner or something like that. And they segregated women and men with this, you know, barrier between them, basically. And it was, like, perfectly fine. Feminists actually defended it, and they're perfectly okay with it. So it's very interesting that they go that route, and they just don't see the contradictions within it. If they were intelligent, they would realize that if they keep up this behavior, one day they're not going to be able to be these feminists that they want to be. They're going to be dependent on a male structure that protects them from this very behavior that they're now importing.
Yeah, basically, I really see it as that's another thing I forgot to bring up earlier. But our selected individuals tend to like they avoid direct confrontation. What they usually do is they try to get two separate groups to fight and kill each other. This is very much. For example, in the U.S., we will often see, like, left-wing politicians sort of try to play the police off of, you know, Black Lives Matter and other, like, minority thug groups. Because leftists, our select individuals tend to, like I said, they don't go out and fight themselves, you know. We're never going to see a feminist actually come out and admit, I want to get raped. But they're going to create the situation. They're going to create a situation where more women are likely to get raped. And they're also going to try to create a situation where those women can have plausible deniability. You know, the anonymous conservative pointed this out to an article a couple months ago. There was this Swiss artist named, I think, Milo Moray, who, in response to the Cologne rape attacks that happened on New Year's Eve, decided to go around a heavily immigrant area of some city in Germany, I forget where, parading around naked, wearing a sign that says, you know, this is not permission to rape me. And an anonymous conservative points out, you know, this woman is putting herself in she's going around naked in an area that is known to be full of rapists, where rapes actually happen. She's going there without any defenses, and if she does get raped, she's going to be in a situation where it was like, well, I was campaigning against rape, you know? So she's basically acting like she wants to get raped, but she's also putting herself in a situation where she can say that she didn't want to get raped. It's that's basically how the left operates. How our selected individuals operate.
Yeah, it's remarkable. I saw some of those, you know, kind of campaigns, whatever you want to call them, that she did. It was just, oh my God, it's remarkable. So one of the premises here, obviously, that is at the foundation of this in an R-dominated government structure is that we are all equal, right? There's so many things in our world today that I think go back to this initial false premise. It doesn't take into account differences. It doesn't take into account you know, genetics to a certain extent, or origin, race, intelligence. There are an awful lot of variables that make, you know, us very, very different, right? So in their view, this seems to point to the fact then that if we are all equal, then any inequality that we see in society must be based on a structural error, right? That it's somehow that the wealth hasn't been distributed equally. Or even that there's someone that must be thieving or stealing that is causing all of this. And they see it as their role to try to equalize this, right? It's to a certain extent their attempt also at the same time to, you know, go after the predator to a certain extent, right? That they need to keep those people in check so that they can actually dominate. I mean, it is a survival strategy at the end, isn't it?
Yes, basically. And that's why you see leftists always agitating for bigger government and also for the reduction of individual freedoms. Like, for example, in the U.S., the left is very much about gun control because firearm ownership allows you to take your own self-defense into your own hands. If you can protect yourself, you don't need to rely on the government the police to do it for you. So the left does not like this. So. And they're also just generally averse to the concept of violence in general, so they want to disarm everyone and make us rely on the police, which also coincidentally allows the government to extend its control over us in other ways. To a certain extent, they've been unsuccessful in the U.S., actually. Organizing on the part of the NRA and on pro-gun activists has actually helped expand gun rights in the U.S. in the past 20 years, but... Basically, they don't want they seek to destroy competition in all its forms, because like you said, Henrik, they believe that all inequality in society is a result of, like, you know, oppression. You know, if success, if 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 a it's white privilege or, structural racism or structural sexism or whatever. It just can simply be that these groups are, so some people have failed in the competition of life. It's due to some nefarious conspiracy. We have got to have the government come in and basically handicap the successful people, like in Harrison Bergeron, so that, everyone can have their fair share of the pie.
Yeah, exactly. Equality has to, that's why equality has to be enforced, right? So you can't allow people to, take off on their own, do something that's successful because that's going to lead them to get ahead of the game. But so if this is a line of thinking, really, that is, that of course creates emotions in these people, but it's ultimately based on biological reality, right? They have an approach to life which is vastly different. They see it as, just as you say, all the resources, all the grass or whatever, to take the rabbit analogy again, that belongs to everybody, right? So if someone is getting too much or something, there's an error there, so it needs to be corrected. But how do we reconcile that? How do we even reach and communicate? I don't know if the Anonymous Conservative goes into this in the book, but how can we, because if it's biological, this is my point, there's no reasoning with that. It's just like either we go one way or we go another, and that's why we seem to get this pendulum movement back and forth. There isn't any kind of cooperation that can occur here, right?
Yeah, he actually does make that point. To a certain extent, cooperation is impossible because you have a huge group of people who have been genetically or through their upbringing and through genetics, believe that they're entitled to free resources, and when push comes to shove, they will actually, violently try to defend those free resources. What he advocates is that, it's worth mentioning that R and K exist on a sort of spectrum. It's not like an either-or thing. There's a large group of people in the moderate middle who have been sort of muddling along, I guess going along with the R-selected flow. What we're doing now is that we're sort of encouraging these people to go over to the K-selected side just because, we don't have to. Our societies are collapsing around us. Like I mentioned earlier, the refugee crisis in Europe has forced a lot of European whites to the right wing. Just, it's either that or watch your societies collapse. Your country's being taken away from you by foreigners who are completely ungrateful and hostile towards the native population. Here in the U.S., we've seen, the Trump campaign, we've seen a whole bunch of people who may have been tuned out of politics, just sort of going along with the flow, getting involved, becoming K-selected, because they see basically, we either have to make a stand now in regards to protecting our communities, protecting our livelihoods, or we're going to lose everything down the road. There's a certain selection of a segment of the R-selected population that's never going to be convinced, but there's a greater, moderate middle of who are not necessarily tuned into the whole thing, who can and are being moved over to the K-selected side, just by witnessing what's going on around them.
Right. So there's there is an ability to swing, if you will, back and forth depending on what you see in your environment. If you respond to that, because I guess one of the reactions too might be to, I think this is pretty common that you see some of these problems in the world and you go, for example, even more to the left to try to remedy them. That somehow, you think, oh, well, just do more of the same. The plan hasn't been fully executed yet, but I see hope that a lot of people that are on that side are actually coming over to the other side, as you said. So I think it is an ability for people to swing back and forth between these two positions.
Yeah, you've got the people who are claiming that communism was never truly tried properly, But like I said, those numbers of people seem to be relatively small, and they're getting smaller by the day just because enough people are tuned into reality and see what's going on around them. To a certain extent, this is all happening on an instinctual, like, lizard brain level. People aren't consciously, like, looking at the news or looking at the what's going on in Europe. They're looking at what's going on in, say, Chicago and thinking to myself, well, gosh diggly darn, I'm gonna stop sleeping around and become a total K-selected individual. Well, but what's happening is that they're gradually being, on a certain unconscious level, they realize that, we're headed for dark times. Our societies are becoming poor. We're becoming poor. They're experiencing, maybe they've been laid off by jobs. I mean, this is an interesting fact that I saw, actually. Again, Anonymous Conservative covered this on his blog. Someone did an analysis of Republican primary voters, and they showed that Trump supporters tend to be they tend to be poorer than other Republicans. They tend to have worse credit scores and just generally have a lower income, and that's because they've been hit hard by the economic recession. They're in a world where resources are contracting, and that's why they're supporting Trump. Compared to, say, supporters for John Kasich or Ted Cruz tend to be wealthier and better off, ergo they're insulated from what's going on around us. So they're amygdalas. They haven't gotten that K shift yet.
Has K begun to, in your view, put up any real organized resistance to this yet? I mean, and if they do, when they do, what do you think that will look like? Are we talking economic, maybe initially, and then going on from there, getting gradually more aggressive, or how do you think that would play out if we get a true opposition to the R selection?
I think what we're going to see is we're going to see greater self-defense organization, particularly after the Chicago riots. We're going to see conservatives organizing more into, I don't want to say militias, but being more aware of their self-defense. And we're going to see a society sort of recede into we're seeing a sort of tribal break in the American experience, and that's part of the case lecture experience. As resources become less restricted, groups tend to sort of splinter off individually. And again, Anonymous Conservatives actually covered this in relation to actually gangs. He pointed out that here in Chicago, there's a huge gang problem on the South Side. But what's actually going on is as resources are becoming constricted, these huge gangs are breaking up into smaller gangs to sort of fight over the individual bits of the pie. We're also seeing the same thing actually happening in Japan with the Yakuza. The large Yakuza mafias that formed during the 80s and 90s are starting to break up now. We're going to see that thing on a general level with nationalism. In Europe, we're seeing we've got the whole Brexit thing going on with the referendum to get Britain out of the EU. The European Union is going to be seriously tested by case selection, and probably won't survive. We could even go so far as to see maybe a breakup of the United States and the different countries with their own constituent cultures. We move from having these huge monocultures where everyone is just sort of the same to these smaller regional units that people that consist of our neighborhoods and people that we know and care about, and damn everyone else outside of it.
These empires they do tend to move over time to different geographical locations, and when I look at some of the coverage from Washington D.C. and what's happening with politics and everything, even down to the freaking architecture of Palladian classical Roman Greco architectural styles and whatnot, it really is evident to me that America is a representation of New Rome, and that, just like the old Rome, is literally beginning to crumble, and it's rotting as we speak, and it's aided along with the importation of people who are not interested in the country. They're not interested in the people that built the country. It's really like what we saw in Rome with the Servile uprising, and I think from Black Lives Matter to now people, Latinos rushing to, that are, legal residents, I believe, they're not yet citizens. They're rushing to become citizens just so that they can vote against Trump. I mean, they're perfectly fine in trying to make sure that white, European Americans can no longer assert themselves and remain at some kind of ethnic balance within the country. I mean, it's remarkable what we're seeing right now.
Yeah, and it's also worth mentioning that this process is being accelerated by governments that are actively playing different racial groups across each other. Like, racial relations in the U.S. are at their lowest point they've been in 50 years, in large part thanks to Obama trying to stir up race war through what happened in Ferguson, through the Trayvon Martin incident, the Baltimore incident, to a lesser extent what happened here in Chicago with Laquan McDonald. An example of how our select individuals will play different groups across each other. The Obama administration has been trying to foment racial hatred between blacks and whites, between Latinos and whites. And we're also seeing hatred between different white groups in the country, where we have Northerners, New Englanders at the throats of Southerners, and what this is doing is creating a massive powder keg situation where people just don't want to, America. It's sort of I read about this a while back. I went to the I was in New York City, and I went to the 9/11 memorial that was erected on the ruins of the Twin Towers, and you got this propaganda video going on in the gift shop talking about how 9/11 brought together Americans as a nation. But it's evident to anyone with a right. pair of eyes that America has never been more divided than it is right now. Part of the shift to case election as people break off from the American Empire, we're going to go into our own little regional units, and in part for survival, but also because these are the people that we are connected most with. We've got to organize into these different groups for our own protection.
Well, exactly. I mean, identity politics is obviously responsible for this, and I think there are upsides to identity politics, at least for white people, because they can finally identify themselves with a group, although that might not be, of course, on a biological or racial level. It might be on much smaller issues than that, political denominations and things like this. But at the same time, it is also preventing, as you said, a larger group of people, in some cases, of working together, right? That you have, divisions within the European American community. Obviously, you have liberals and conservatives as one of the more bigger ones. But even within that, it's breaking up. Do you think is that helpful or is that damaging at the end? Because it seems to me that still many of the incoming groups, immigrant groups, and whatever, they stick to their own, no matter what, on an ethnic level. And so with the numbers that they can gain from that. They always, they vote for Obama because he's black, right? I mean, they vote for Marco Rubio in Florida because he's Cuban, right? It's a very, they always stand by their own, but it's only we as whites that are bickering and fighting over tiny little issues in some cases where we might be very much on the same page on most of the issues, right?
I don't necessarily think that splitting up among whites is necessarily a bad thing, just because, number one, like I said, a lot of these different groups of whites really don't have a whole lot in common. And number two, these are selected groups that are, at the Obama administration and the EU have been using to sort of play against whites, don't have a very good organization themselves. I mean, and again, this is something Anonymous Conservative has covered on his own blog. You got the case, for example, the refugees in Cologne. He had talked about an incident where this one Russian bouncer was defending a woman against these rapist refugees, and even though he was outnumbered by 10-1, they didn't want to fight with him because they're averse to fighting. The only time an R selected individual will fight is when they have a massive numerical advantage, and when they assume that their targets are not going to fight back. These guys were all they try to make some excuses as to why they weren't going to go after this bouncer guy, and they were like, "We're going to find you sometime else, and we're going to kill you." That's not much of a threat. It's basically admitting that that you are cowardly and afraid, and we see with the in the U.S., we do have Black Lives Matter and the gang situation in Chicago, but again, these groups mainly operate unchecked because no one they assume they can. The police don't do anything, the white neighbors don't do anything. But what happens is as soon as case election hits in a big way and people start organizing, all these R select groups are going to fade away very quickly. It's not about numbers; it's about organization and about in group loyalty. And these refugees haven't shown a good amount of loyalty. They're just looking for free resources. The minute you put the slightest amount of pressure on them, they're going to shut up and go away.
Right. So it's in the same way that you can have a wolf roaming around trying to target rabbits or whatever, and the others wouldn't care about if one rabbit gets eaten right in front of them, right? They would, they would just run away from there. But at the end of it, they would still find some more grass to munch on. It isn't that really organizational skill, and it's not, of course, always true that that we have lone wolves. They hunt in packs too, right? They also have the ability to organize.
Yes, yes. You know, it's going to be every rabbit for himself. They don't. They like I said, they have no loyalty to their own in group. So, like I said, the minute the wolves start organizing, you know, the rabbits are going to be running scared.
So it's really just the government, really, that's holding this together, the structure in place. Is there? Can we? Maybe this is getting too nitty gritty into it, but is there a way we can kind of quantify what the structure of government belongs to within the RK selection theory? Because there'd be some people argued that, of course, that it's a very predatory class that actually has ended up ruling government in some cases. You have some of the most unfit people attaining large political influence in many countries, and they are utterly ruthless when it comes to other people.
Well, I'd say the government's really a reflection of the people that happens to rule. You know, our governments tend to be very corrupt because the people themselves have become corrupt, are selected, and are just looking for, they're looking for a handout. You know, the government is focused on perpetuating itself above all else. And again, this is where you get the fear of Donald Trump, of like, you know, UKIP and Britain, because you have a group of political parties who are basically or political figures who are threatening to come into the government and clean house, and they have the support of a larger and growing number of the electorates. So I say our governments tend to be full of our selected individuals because it's a reflection of how degenerate we've become as a people. But as, again, the case selection hits the people, it's going to hit the governments as well, just by sheer necessity. The amount of money required to keep the gigantic iron triangle going is eventually going to dry up. We don't even need to do anything. It's just sheer logistical reality. We do not have unlimited resources as a species to keep perpetuating ourselves.
Yeah.
And when this case selection hits, you know, the governments are going to. On the peaceful side, we could see democratic revolutions, and at worst, we could see outright revolutions.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's going to be upheaval, unprecedented upheaval in different ways, economic, but also, political, etc. But we have, hiked taxes, radical feminism or state feminism. We have this division on liberal versus conservative. We have a move culturally towards Marxism, degeneracy. There is promiscuity, sexually speak, in sexuality. There's a lot of, things that we have briefly talked about, but in what other ways would you say that RK selection theory kind of plays itself out today? How do we see it manifest itself? Is there something else we should outline here?
I'd say it actually manifests itself actually in many ways physically. People sort of commented on how the young people, the hipsters, tend to look very androgynous. You've got all these guys going around with low testosterone faces, skinny and with fuzzy pube beards, and women who are fat and kind of look like men. Basically, that's actually another product of our case selection theory. I didn't really get into the androgyny. In a case selection environment, you have a large amount of sexual dimorphism because men and women fulfill different roles. The men are the hunters, the men are the protectors, the women are responsible for keeping the home and rearing children. In an R selected environment where there are men and women sort of take on each other's roles, and as a result, they move towards an androgynous middle. Because men are no longer necessary for protection, so they start focusing on preening and sort of trying to look pretty to look excessively sexually attractive. And you have women who become physically, they're responsible for raising their children on their own, so they become physically stronger and more masculine. That plays itself out and as we move towards case selection, we're going to see men becoming men and women becoming women again. We can actually sort of see this this dynamic sort of play out according to climate. In the sub-Saharan African so-called hoe cultures, HOE, the instrument, not like hoes, it's and hoes. That's a You see this sort of thing going on with women, where they have to raise the women, their kids on their own, so they do all the work on their own. As a result, they tend to become more masculine, whereas the men tend to be more, the flashy sexual ornamentation like peacocking, etc. Because their purpose as protectors of the family has been sort of usurped, so they focus more on just being sort of like flashy clowns.
Interesting. Yeah, very interesting. So a return to family structure, obviously, because if things fall apart on a societal level, you would basically default back to something which has proven itself to work throughout time, which is, of course, the family structure. That's the reason why it has been so dominant in the past, because it actually works. And from that, of course, you do get tribes and cooperation so that you can hunt, in packs, etc., hunt animals. And so that you will probably be a fallback to something which is much more primal than going in the direction of something metrosexual, right? That's the reasonable kind of position to take here.
Yes, and to a certain extent, we're actually starting to see this shift we're starting to see this shift in Europe with, we've seen all these women who are like, there was the case of that a German teenager who posted that Facebook video, where are the men to protect us? Why aren't the men protecting us from these rapists, We're going to see, just by sheer necessity, men are going to have to reassume their roles as protectors of society, protectors of women, protectors of family, and women are going to sort of naturally gravitate towards that, submissive role of being being homemakers and mothers. Again, just because out of sheer necessity, in a resource-restricted environment, you can't go around slutting it up every night, every Friday night, and expect to live long. You have to band together with in a family, in a greater tribe for protection, and just to have resources that you can keep living, and your any children you have can keep living.
Yeah, I wonder, in this turmoil that we are beginning to enter into right now, I wonder what position our governments will take in this, because obviously if we would see some kind of organized protection effort by men, etc., I think we would see the government actually clamping down on these people initially. We would see them turn on... as we've kind of seen now, we have in Finland, of course, we have the, what do they call themselves, Soldiers of Odin or Sons of Odin, for example. It's a good initial reflection of an attempt to like try to steer up the situation, because in the contract, if you will, between the people and the government has failed their basic task, which is to protect its citizens, right? So you're going to see these, if you will, vigilante groups pop up. But in that, despite the fact that the police are not doing anything, it's hands off to many of these immigrants. In Sweden, we have this thing they call Code 291, which is basically classifying a crime that has been, committed by a so-called refugee or an immigrant or something as basically hands off. Don't talk about it. Don't bring any attention to it. So they're trying their best to cover it up, while many of the people within the countries are trying to organize themselves to take over this role as protectors. So it's very interesting to see this dynamic.
Yeah, I was actually going to bring up the Soldiers of Odin. They're a perfect example, and I think it's Roosh who talked about this story, but there's now a Soldiers of Odin chapter in Norway, and what's happened is that local Muslims have, supported by ISIS, have created a front group to fight the Soldiers of Odin.
Oh, my God.
And what I absolutely see is that the Norwegian government is probably going to side with the ISIS group, because they regard the they regard the Soldiers of Odin as a threat to their authority. And also because they don't want to be seen as racist.
That's right. Yeah, it's remarkable, absolutely remarkable. And this is obviously at the end of it, it might be very disheartening, but I see it as something very positive, Matt. The fact that things are shaken up enough now to begin to truly break up this established order, if you will, and move towards a more, sane foundation. Of course, it doesn't mean that this is going to go down easy. It doesn't mean that this is going to be peaceful or any of that. But hey, what are we going to do, right? Something has to change. This can't go on.
Yeah, it's going to be a struggle, and we're going to see the R-selected types, fight hard for everything they're taking. The government wants to maintain the status quo of, importing more non-whites and importing more R-select individuals to cause chaos, because the government wants to perpetuate itself. And I haven't really touched on the role narcissism plays in this. Anonymous conservative, in addition to writing the evolutionary psychology behind politics, he's also the author of How to Deal with Narcissists. And as I mentioned earlier in the show, that narcissists and psychopaths tend to have extremely small amygdalas, which is a we have a lot of narcissists in our governments who are actively looking to sort of hurt people because this is sort of a bird's eye view of it, like with everything else we've discussed here. But it's like the best way to describe narcissists is that they don't have souls. That makes any sense. They lack a firm, concrete identity, And to compensate, they create what is called a narcissistic reality, a narcissistic shell. And what we're seeing is reality is just massively intruding on these narcissists, penetrating their shell. And as a result, we're going to see some serious acting out in the coming years. As when you penetrate a narcissist's false reality, usually you get, that's where you get narcissistic rage, that's where you get narcissistic injury, and when a narcissist's reality is threatened, they become very, very dangerous. You know, you get, this is where you get, like, murder, suicides and whatnot on, like, the micro level, and on the macro level, we are headed for some major upheaval when the, our selected narcissists and our government realize that, the gravy train is over for them, basically, you know. Change is coming, enforced by, actually, in many ways, their own actions, and they're not going to be happy about it.
Now, there's a couple of more things here we should discuss before we take a short break and then switch over to Trump. We definitely want to obviously talk about your sites and where people can get the book and all that. But one more thing I want to run by you. How is it about the manipulation of the K, right? Let's take this example of what happened in Europe, really, when this wave began of migrants pouring, you know, into Europe. It was really that photo that set it up. I mean, this was organized. It was a media effort. There was a lot of other thing components behind it. But if you look at it from a very fundamental level, basic level, it was a manipulation of people, right? That it was like this, what about the children, right? So that speaks then to the K, right? Because if R don't really care too much about that, then this is obviously people who are high investment parenting, et cetera, that they see that, oh my God, something's happening here with the children. We got to step in and do everything we can to possibly remedy this, right?
Using children is one of the number one ways, our selected individuals try to manipulate K-selected individuals, because we happen to, we're into high investment parenting. We care about children. And when they try to, that's why I'm thinking in the U.S. And again, I'm not as familiar with European politics, but here in the U.S., the left is constantly trying to push through policies, left-wing policies, on the basis of, what about the children? You know, we need to have gun control because what about the children? Like, for example, after the Sandy Hook shooting, we have to ban guns because, you know, some autistic whack job wandered into an elementary school and started shooting up kids. We have to start banning guns because what about the children? Or on the extreme example, I can't remember whether she did this in 2007 or 2009, but Nancy Pelosi, the leader of the Democrats in the U.S. House, the former House Speaker and a radical leftist, did a photo op where when she assumed the Speaker's gavel, she was surrounded by all these kids. You know, it's a way of manipulating the K's into supporting all these left-wing policies. Or, you know, in the case of Obamacare, it was like, for the children, we have to constantly do things for the children. It's a BS guilt tactic, and K's need to recognize it when we see it. Like, in the case of, you know, they're showing a picture of a dead kid to try to gin up support for refugees, when in fact the vast majority of the refugees are single men who, instead of fighting to protect their families back home, they're invading Europe and trying to take advantage of Europeans' goodwill.
Well, and what's funny is obviously the K does it for the children too, right? That the importation of these refugees, which is causing crime, theft, rape, that's like, okay, well, we got to protect not only ourselves, especially we got to protect the children. In terms of the guns, like, yeah, same thing. We need to have people who can protect the children, right? So it's just two opposing ideologies that really go head to head, which is leading to clashes, right?
Yeah. We're just headed for a massive powder keg situation in the coming months and years. And like I said, it's more or less an unavoidable situation, because either in terms of resources, we can't keep going down the road we're going. You know, the K's are going to come together and defend their communities, and the R's are going to try and keep the scam going. And on a certain level, these two groups are never going to reconcile.
No, exactly. Speaking of Trump, protesters, they plan a 10-day march across the country now to whine about Trump. You had even Trump saying that if they try to, cheat him out of the nomination, there might also be riots on the other side. You have Black Lives Matter activists that also talk about that, they'll incite riots everywhere if Trump wins. This is, it's definitely heating up. The summer might be something else, I'll tell you. But let's, before we talk more about Trump and all of that, and Chicago, of course, because you were there, so you can give us a little bit of an insight on that. The website for, you know, where I went to find out more is anonymousconservative.com. Before we talk about your websites, Matt, tell us about the book a little bit more and where people can get a copy of it.
The Evolutionary Psychology Behind Politics is the book that explains all this. It lays out our case selection theory and how it relates to humans, and how it relates to society and politics. So you can get the Evolutionary Psychology Behind Politics. It's available from Amazon. It's also available via Box Day's publishing company, Castalia House, or you can just go to you can also go to anonymousconservative.com. He has a blog there that he updates daily with information, you know, his take on the passing political scene. In addition, Anonymous Conservative is also the author of How to Deal with Narcissists, and you too can find that on. I really recommend that as a book on how to. You have to understand narcissism is the preeminent personality disorder of our time, and you need to. We're surrounded by narcissists constantly, and you need to know how to basically cope with their manipulations and get them out of your life. I really recommend his book, How to Deal with Narcissists, as a handbook for doing so. And in fact, he actually cites my writing as an example of how to trigger narcissists and just sort of, turn them into sputtering messes. So you can get that book, How to Deal with Narcissists, at Amazon. It's also available, again, via Castalia House. And again, you can go to his website, anonymousconservative.com, for all information about these books, as well as his other writing.
Right. Well, give us your details, Matt. Obviously, you know, you have a number of books out there. I don't know if there's anything new since we last spoke, and obviously tell us if there's any other sites that you write for that you'd like to plug as well.
Well, you can find me at my blog, mattforney.com. I publish there usually daily. All my information can be found there. I'm on Twitter at twitter.com/basedmattforney. My old account was banned due to Black Lives Matter activists being upset that I infiltrated their protest in Chicago. But I'm back on Twitter at the new handle. You can check out my books at mattforneybooks.com. I'm the author of several, including Confession of an Online Hustler, Do the Philippines, and many others. And you can find them at mattforneybooks.com. And they're also available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other book retailers. Additionally, I am... You can find me on YouTube at youtube.com/user/realmattforney. I'm posting videos there, usually of covering the political situation in the U.S. extensively, the American presidential election. You can find my videos there about it. You can also find my writing columns at Return of Kings at returnofkings.com. And I also do a lot of political reporting for WriteOn, WriteOn.net. And I also host the Matt Forney Show weekly podcast. You can find that at soundcloud.com/MattForneyShow. And... yeah, that pretty much covers everything.
Very good. MattForney.com. And we have a lot of good stuff to cover here about Trump in the second segment, so definitely stay tuned, folks. We're going to talk about Chicago. We're going to talk about what's going on overall with all these protests and what might happen here in this summer, and then, of course, up in November towards the election. So definitely stay tuned. But we'll take a short break, and then we'll be right back.
All right, get him out. Get him out. Get him out. Get him out. Get him out of here! Out! 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 It's incredible! Out! 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 Oh, look what we have here, some wonderful people. Aww. Get out of here! Get out! Get out! Get out of here! USA, USA, USA. Okay, forget about those people. Forget about them. Get them out of here. Out, out, out. Oh, we have another wise guy. Go ahead. Get him the hell out. Get him out. Get him out. Incredible. All right. Get him out of here. Go on. Get out. 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 Unbelievable. Hillary Clinton does not have. Oh, get out of here. Get out of here. Get out of here. Get out. 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 Unbelievable. Get out. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Oh, well. Get out! You know, in the old days, which isn't so long ago, when we were less politically correct, that kind of stuff wouldn't have happened. Today we have to be so nice, so nice. We always have to be so nice.
As we proceed in the second hour, we talk about some of the disruptors and whiny protesters at some of the recent Trump rallies. The big change in tone really took place in Chicago. Matt was there, so we'll talk about what actually happened and who might have been meddling behind the scenes to make it worse than it had to be. I think they were hoping to derail it completely, which it fortunately didn't do. We're also going to include an interview with Joe, a younger gentleman who was at the Chicago event, to get his take on what happened and why. That's right at the end of the second hour. We are going to put the Trump train in perspective to American politics, foreign policy, and how America is changing politically and demographically. We will talk with Matt about why he supports Trump and why he thinks you should too. Don't miss the second hour, some very interesting insight into this that the mainstream media, with all its assets, reporters, researchers, won't cover. As usual, they've dropped the ball completely, so get the full story with us instead. RedIceMembers.com, go there to sign up and tune in. We'll talk to you right after the break. Stay tuned. Second hour with Matt Forney coming up.